It seems like every time I think the plot of the U.S. presidential election cannot handle another twist, one reveals itself. The latest is the relinquishing of the current president Joe Biden's bid for re-election, just 4 months shy of Election Day, and less than 3 days following the close of the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, a convention which was filled with sights never seen from the state before, like the ripping off of a T-shirt by a well-known wrestler, the poetic words from a major online influencer, and, of course, a presidential candidate sporting a bandage over his recent gunshot wound. The theme for the week was strength and unity. Was the former president able to stay on message? And how would it have affected the RNC if President Joe Biden would have just let the world know sooner about his plans to withdraw from the race? I'm Skynell Hughes, and this is Perspective. The game of politics can often be compared to other games we play. Whether it be a complex game of strategy like checkers, or one of entrapment like Twister. And often politics reflects the same goal as Monopoly, just gain as much money as you can while trying to stay out of jail. But the 2024 U.S. presidential election, well, especially these summer months, can easily be related to the game of dominoes. Republicans had often pointed out the health and mental capacity of the current president. So often, it became lumped into all of the other talking points, which caused most Americans' eyes to glaze over. Yet, following a predictably dreadful showing at the first presidential debate between the two men, who were not even officially their party's candidates, the Democrats were no longer able to cover the obvious. From that moment, then came the attempted assassination of Donald Trump at a campaign rally in Pennsylvania, which, following an iconic moment which will forever be put into historical books, former President Donald J. Trump became a living martyr for his supporters, many of them gathering at the Republican National Convention just 48 hours later.
And I wanted to do something to let him know I was okay. I raised my right arm, looked at the thousands and thousands of people that were breathlessly waiting, and started shouting, "Fight, fight, fight."
It was here that Donald Trump announced his vice presidential nominee, Senator J.D. Vance, a young man just shy of 40, whose fame didn't come from his service as a Marine or his Yale Law School degree, but rather his life story being portrayed in a popular book turned into a Hollywood movie. Meanwhile, on the other side of the aisle, President Biden isn't having such luck, as following a campaign stop, Biden tested positive for COVID, rendering him off the campaign trail and into isolation at a very crucial time. There were a few things about the campaign suspension that were unusual. President Joe Biden ended his 2024 campaign unceremoniously with a letter posted in a tweet on X. It's not on presidential letterhead and had a digital signature. Cabinet members and campaign team found out he was bowing out from the tweet that was sent out. They were on calls trying to shore up support from delegates when this all happened. Then his chief of staff, not the president, is the one who held a meeting with cabinet members to make the official announcement to the team. Now legally with him out of the race, all of his delegates are released to pick up whomever they choose or they go into an open convention. However, in the same breath, Biden endorses his vice president, Kamala Harris, in a follow-up tweet. And as of July 23rd, there has been enough delegates have promised to vote for her, making her the presumptive nominee. Did this domino effect ultimately lead to the decision for President Joe Biden to no longer pursue his re-election bid? Well, I want to discuss this with our panel. Robin Bureau, who is a veteran and former Barack Obama campaign director. Stevie Giorno is back with us to give his observation as a representative of the Young Republicans. And Angie Wong, who is the board member of the Coalition PAC. Thank you so much for joining me. Robin, this is your show, so I have to ask you, was Joe Biden stepping down the best option for the Democratic Party in this election cycle?
There became no other option because of what was happening, really, with the money. The $90 million was frozen by that PAC, held hostage. They said that they wouldn't release it unless Biden stepped down to literally any other person on the ticket. There just became no other option, and it was a financial decision. I've seen plenty of campaigns die, and it's always money. If they run out of money, it's over.
Okay, so I've got to ask you, Angie, considering just this morning, Axios was reporting Biden, the morning of, Axios was reporting that Biden was not going to leave the race, as he was still begrudging to President Obama for pushing Hillary Clinton in the 2016 race over him. And there were countless interviews and statements coming from his administration saying he was going to stay. So what finally caused the change in his decision?
Yeah, absolutely. That whole weekend was a disaster. It was a mess. Finally, they got him out. He had COVID, and he had to go home to Delaware for a couple of days while they work out all of the particulars. And Kamala Harris was the successor to being on the ticket. Now, there's still a lot of things to work out. Kamala still needs to gain all his delegates, which looks to be the case. And she needs to convince the donor class that she is the one. Also, you know, we're hearing from congressional members that, well, look, they're campaigning and their campaign finances are back to health again because of the switch. So all of these came into place. Ultimately, it was a decision for Joe and Jill Biden to get off the ticket.
Well, it's interesting that you talk about the campaigning and the money came back to play. Stevie, do you think Kamala Harris brings back some of those demographics the Dems were struggling with in this election cycle, but they usually do really well with, like youth and minority voters?
I don't think so. I think if we look back at 2020, we'll see that she was one of the most unpopular candidates running. We saw Tulsi Gabbard destroy her on a debate stage. And so I don't think she's going to do very well, especially considering how ridiculous the past week has been, where we haven't seen the president of the United States. We don't know what's going on with leadership in our country. The vice president has said she is not going to be at the joint session of Congress when Prime Minister Netanyahu is going to be there. So we really don't know what's going on with the leadership in our country. And it'd be nice if someone would give us an answer outside of Twitter and get in front of a TV camera.
Stevie, I hear what you're saying, but I have to ask, compared to what Barack or what we saw with Joe Biden, it's really hard to make him look young and cool and hip. I mean, they're doing already a pretty good job. Just in the first weekend, you had this viral sensation about being a brat. All of a sudden, people started talking about her being a brat. That was sort of things that used to be applied to Trump for the last 4 years. He's been able to market that. Are you not a little bit concerned that issues like that might be a reason that makes young voters actually get back engaged and potentially look at the Democrat Party?
It might be, but I think having Kid Rock and Hulk Hogan and Dana White at the RNC is going to do more for young people. I think one of the things the Republicans did right at the convention was, instead of acting like a political party, we're instead focusing on making a cultural movement to where it's going to be fun and cool to be a Republican, where for the past 20 years, 15 years, it's been cool to be a Democrat. So I think we've made some positive steps in making it fun to be a Republican.
It's interesting you bring that out, because I remember the one convention where the biggest celebrity the Republicans were able to bring out was the Duggar family. And if you don't know who that is, you can Google that one. Robin,
I remember that.
Do you remember that? That was all they could get out there. That was, and they were begging for anybody and everybody. So there was at least hiring a little bit of the bar. But I am sure the Democrats now, potentially when they have their convention, can bring in a whole slew of celebrities that are going to be excited once again. Robin, talking about celebrities, probably the biggest celebrity within the Democratic Party right now is Barack Obama. Now, he came out initially and said he was not going to endorse anyone in the race. Yet, some took this as a sign he did not support Kamala Harris. Do you agree, or does former President Obama have another plan?
Well, you know, one thing about Obama, I know him well, he likes to play it cool. If you'll remember back when Joe Biden was first running in 2020 as in the primary election, Obama did not endorse. He waited until the voters had had their say, and then he endorsed once it was safe to do so for the general election. So Obama is just doing what he always does and playing it cool. I read too much into it also myself yesterday, and then I was so gently reminded that this is what he always does.
Well, and I have to thank Angie, because I'm looking at right now what happened those first few days out. You have Joe Biden actually say he's not going to run again. Then he does just a phone call the next day into his campaign headquarters. Then he actually appears, goes to Washington, D.C. Then on the next day, he does an evening primetime speech. Did Joe Biden take a page out of the Trump campaign handbook and sucking out all of the air out of the wind so that all the news stories are focused on him? Did he finally learn how to compete with Trump and out-Trump Trump?
Yeah, I actually thought that this morning that, you know what, he just announced J.D. Vance, right? And he got shot in the ear, all of that. So finally, the DNC and whoever's left in the Biden administration has figured out how to steal all the media air. Look, Kamala Harris has a whole month to prove herself. She now has the duty to now build a momentum. And I think Obamas are letting her, you know, let's see what she does in a month. And I think that's what we're going to see. It's a test for her.
You know, Stevie, a lot of people are calling those first few days with after they named Kamala Harris as the heir apparent as her honeymoon period, that obviously she got money in there, she got some excitement. Do you feel like that's going to continue? And my question is, if she's out on the campaign trail and Joe Biden's not doing too well enough to be able to run on the campaign trail, who's running the country out of the Oval Office right now?
Well, I don't think we're going to know the answer to that. You know, it's very reminiscent of 2020. You know, she came out of the gate. She was doing very well, raised some money, and then very quickly her support evaporated. So we'll have to see if she's learned any lessons from 2020. But it is very disappointing that, you know, Republicans all the time, myself included, are told we're threats to democracy and a threat to our democratic republic. But somehow this person who didn't receive a single vote in the 2024 primary has been selected to be the nominee after President Biden, you know, ran a campaign and got all the votes. And now it seems like there's a bait and switch. And it's really unfortunate that a lot of people feel duped, and I understand why they do. But I think it's on par for what's happened in our country the past 3.5 years.
Well, I know just the person to ask about how the Democrats are going to respond to that, because we've got Robin here. And Robin's one of those that'll give us an honest answer as he's watched campaigns over the years. What do you say to those who feel like that the process has been duped, that people didn't get a chance to vote for Kamala?
Fortunately, I'm not seeing a lot of that from my friends in the Democratic Party.
You're seeing from the Republicans. The Republicans are definitely pointing that out.
Republicans are pointing that out. But my friends who voted in the Democratic primaries really don't have an issue with this. They're actually really energized and enthused. I know that you've seen the numbers that there were 44,000 Black women who were on the call that was only supposed to be capped at 1,000 Zoom callers. And then Black men had their Zoom call, and it was 34,000, was also supposed to be around 500 people. So there's a huge rush of enthusiasm here that, frankly, Joe Biden just didn't enjoy. So I'm seeing a tremendous groundswell of enthusiasm, and I'm really not seeing any of the complaints from Democratic primary voters that they feel that they were slighted in any way, shape, or form. I want to point out that the Constitution does not guarantee that when you vote in a primary, it guarantees that your vote's going to go to a delegate, and their vote is not bound to anyone. So that's just the way it is, unfortunately.
So then here's my question. I'm going to stick with you on this, Robin, because you get to be the Democrat's going to give us the advice on this one. Do you think it helps or hurts having Joe Biden in the office right now? I mean, he has the power of the pen and Kamala's his vice, but does it help that he's still in it? Or should he just go on and turn over the powers to Kamala and give her kind of a head start so that she could have a smooth transition? And why did he wait so long to do this?
Oh, my goodness. That's the million-dollar question. Why did he wait so long? But look, it was honestly well-timed right after the RNC to take the wind out of their sails. I'm not sure that was the case. I wouldn't put it past him. He's a pretty shrewd politician with 50 years of experience. At the end of the day, I wish that he would step aside and go ahead and name her president, because it would help us. It would show that she has the ability to lead during a time of crisis. He's supposedly really sick right now with COVID, hasn't made any public appearances. Now would be the perfect time to do that. I suspect, Scotty, that he has some things up his sleeve with regard to executive actions. I wouldn't be surprised to see some doozies coming out before he does that.
Including one for his own son, Hunter. I want to say thank you for joining me on that one. Thank you, Robin. Stay with us, because prior to this announcement of Joe Biden bowing out of the race, the Grand Ole Party held their party's convention. We're going to chat with three of the people. We're going to say goodbye to Robin, who were in attendance, and get their perspective as to whether the world saw what was really going on at the RNC. We'll be right back.
From the very start of the Biden presidency, we were told the occupant of the Oval Office was obsessed with his legacy. 3.5 years later, that legacy can be summed up with a few choice words: division, failure, incompetence, and shame. History will remember Joe Biden.
Welcome back to Perspective. I'm your host, Skynell Hughes. Sandwiched between an assassination attempt on one party's presidential candidate and the dropping out of another, we have a political convention, which was said to be the most organized and unified convention seen by the modern day GOP. Does our panel agree? Well, let us ask three people who were there. Stevie Giorno is back with us to give us his observation as one of the youngest delegates on the floor and as a representative of the Young Republicans and a part of the Tennessee delegation. Here in studio, for the first time, we are joined by Angie Wong, who attended the RNC as a Florida delegate and is a board member of the Coalition PAC, and Amy DeLore, who is a journalist and director of video for the Washington Examiner. She's been on the campaign trail for almost 2 years and went to Milwaukee to cover the RNC. Thank you so much for joining me on this. I want to first start off by talking about the whopping 90-minute speech Trump gave on the final night of the RNC. The longest nomination acceptance speech on record. So, Stevie, what was the feeling and the energy on the floor after the speech?
Well, as the balloons dropped, it was one of the most unifying things I've ever seen. You know, the whole week was incredible to have President Trump get shot on Saturday. And on Monday evening, he's spending time with all the delegates and alternates and guests. That usually doesn't happen. He came all 4 days, and every time he walked into the building, the energy was electric, and it was an amazing time, and I think it'll go down in history as one of the most impressive things a presidential candidate has ever done, including give a 90-minute speech and not miss a beat and unify all types of Republicans and independent voters.
Stevie's very optimistic on it, but Amy, you've been to a number of Trump rallies. So I have to ask, how did this speech differ from his normal programming? You usually get kind of a fusion of planned and unplanned comments when Trump starts to speak.
Well, of course, after the assassination attempt on the Saturday before, he actually exclusively gave an interview to Washington Examiner saying that he completely ripped up his original speech and he decided to pivot and have a speech of strength and unity. It became a theme, actually, for the entire convention. But did he stay on message is the question. So I had, for the first time, the perspective to actually watch the prompter while he was speaking, which was really interesting to see when he went off script. Yep. He said going into this, he was not going to mention Biden's name at all, not once. And of course, he couldn't help himself. He did end up mentioning Biden when he was saying, when you combine the 10 worst presidents, and it has to be Biden. And I know some of his campaign surrogates and part of his team were really upset that he did kind of take away from that moment, almost in the same way that he did when he won South Carolina and Nikki Haley also won a large margin and he didn't just have a speech of victory. So when we talk about the record-breaking speech, we have to say he gave both speeches. And people on the ground, of course, like Stevie, when I spoke around to people, there was a ton of energy. Everyone on the ground, all of the delegates seemed really happy and really fired up for the rest of the season.
It didn't help that you had 10,000 balloons that were all the way up to your waist at that point. But Angie, this was your first RNC. And so having only what you've seen in the media in the past, to compare with. Do you feel like you had an accurate expectation going into the convention compared to what was realistically happening on the floor?
Well, you know, I was a freshman at the convention.
But didn't I just say you're a freshman?
I was. But many people have been there multiple times, and they felt the gravity of this particular convention much more so because we knew what was at stake. They wanted us to attend Donald Trump's funeral. Instead, we made him the official nominee of the Republican ticket for president. So that's what we delivered. And once the roll call was out, we were partying. So it was fantastic to see all of that. I thought Donald Trump was really subdued. He was really human for the first time. Whereas, you know, Trump rally, MAGA, Trump was usually shouting at people. This one, he was human. And I think it was very relatable. It was great to see him as grandpa. It was really nice to see him just as a human being, except of, you know, completely different from how a lot of media has portrayed him. So it was a really softer side of Trump. But then the Trump came out and said all those things that he wasn't supposed to say and went off script.
You're still going to get Trump. I say the hardest job on the campaign trail is running the teleprompter for Donald Trump, because you just never know where you're going to go. Sort of like being in the media the past few weeks and trying to figure where the news cycle is. Stevie, coming at it from a younger perspective, lots of older members of the party at the convention. In fact, when they were talking about Kid Rock showing up and performing, I'm like, well, 90% of the people even know who that is. They'll probably think a little kid's going to come out. It was not a cheap ticket. Hard for young people to get there. But on the first night, President Trump announced his vice presidential candidate, who just happened to be one of the youngest candidates in U.S. history for vice president. Do you think J.D. Vance actually helps attract younger voters to give the GOP a stance?
I do. I think if you look at his life since he was a young adult, it was one of being a servant leader. I think he's perfect to be President Trump's vice president, and he's going to lead our party, you know, after President Trump is gone in 4 years. I think it's really important that we find someone who's going to carry on the America First policies, and I don't think there's going to be anyone better than the person who's going to be working with the president for the next 4 years.
Angie kind of brought it up, talking about what was going on in the field, and the liberals wanted us to be at a funeral rather than an actual convention. Amy, you went to his first rally exactly 1 week after the shooting. Was there increased security, do you feel like? And what was the feeling on the ground? Were people a little bit more hesitant going in?
You know, we as media and attendees all got notice saying arrive early, there would be increased security checks. A metal water bottle that I had with me, the entire RNC made it through every checkpoint they took at the rally. I mean, definitely because that was considered a weapon, but my giant tripod was not, so make it make sense. But I would say we got there 6 a.m. in the morning, preset, lines down 6 blocks by 9 a.m. We were asking people what time they arrived. Some people arrived the night before. And we asked very specifically, are you nervous? Do you have some concern now because someone did die? Like, it's not just that, oh, the president is the one they were going after. So I have a thought, if Victor would like to play it, of some reaction from attendees there of what they said.
And I would hope that it's next to me so I could break the guy's neck.
I'm not concerned about my safety. If something happens to me in this dress, I feel like that's that's a whole nother photo.
Ton of excitement. I feel safe, and you know, after what happened last week, I just felt we had to be here to support him.
What I really love about this crowd is the fact that we respect the police officers, so we are cheering when police officers are passing.
Yeah, so as you can see, a ton of energy, a ton of excitement. Every time police officers went by, everyone was shouting and cheering for them. People were saying because of what happened, they were more rallied behind the president and made more of an attempt to attend.
It's interesting that you say because of what happened, because prior to going to the RNC, and Stevie, you were on the show, we were talking about the division that had happened within the Republican Party. We were talking about there was still a wing that was potentially going to cause some sort of coup, funny to say that now, within the Republican Party at the convention. So do you think the RNC would have been different if there had not been that attempt to assassinate Donald Trump?
Good question. Certainly we were united. We weren't fighting as much. We saw everybody there from the, you know, full spectrum of the Republican Party. We were all rallying behind Donald Trump. And I'm not sure if that would have happened had it not been for any sort of attempt on his life. Certainly the delegates knew their job. We got the roll call right away. We are hearing now that President Trump wanted to be there every single day, whereas before he was only supposed to be there the very last night. So he wanted to watch over everyone, make sure they're doing their jobs.
I would like to add to that, Nikki Haley and Ron DeSantis, yep, last minute prime time speech additions. She originally had not even been invited. So that definitely was, yep, I think, something that he came to after this attempt and said, all right, this is time. And J.D. Vance, in his speech, he said, anybody out there, you're now welcome to the Republican Party.
Stevie, I know you were talking to people that were on the floor, that were watching on television. What was the one thing that people did not see on TV or was not portrayed accurately on TV that was happening there on the floor? What moment within the RNC?
Well, I would say, you know, there was a lot of controversy going on about whether the party platform was going to pass, if there were going to be issues with that. But I'm happy to say that we got it through. It passed on a voice vote. And I think it's really important because that platform, which was chaired by Senator Blackburn, will be the thing that gets us over the finish line. It is going to increase the involvement of young people and minorities wanting to be Republicans, because now, instead of having to read through 60 pages of what Republicans believe in, it's 16, 17 pages. You know, it's very easily organized of 20 points of what makes you a Republican. And I think it's going to attract a lot of people. But it was very unifying to have everyone agree that this is what we need to do as a party.
He's right. The platform definitely took a lot of heat, especially before the RNC officially started. From your observations, what did people not see that was going on floor at home?
Oh, boy. Well, you know, so the whole CrowdStrike thing happened while Eric Trump was on stage. And I'm sitting three rows away from Eric Trump. All of a sudden, all our phones, ping, 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 lit up. And we found out our flights have been canceled. So, you know, we were expecting little shenanigans to happen. Luckily, not too many things did happen. But some of my delegation still trying to make their way home.
Well, I hope the three of you have been able to get some rest by now. It's a week later, but I am sure this will be memories to last a lifetime. Stevie, Angie, Amy, thank you so much for sharing your experience on RNC. I am sure it'll be one for a lifetime. Now, all of the drama happening in America this election cycle, especially today, is bringing down the level of respect other countries have for the USA. I believe the world expected more out of the American political system, and it's almost with disgust in their voice that the events in America are unfolding this way. Well, disgust or fear knowing instability in one of the major superpowers could have a global rippling effect. Looking around the world, it's obvious other countries are very concerned about a President Kamala Harris, and the lack of a designated second choice is adding to that discomfort. I do think the power holders in the Democrat Party are giving Kamala Harris the next 2 weeks to observe the reactions by the donors and the engagement by a previously disengaged base. If she does not meet a certain threshold, they will be switching out at the DNC, and this gives them enough time to do so. Whomever that might be, the world will just have to wait and see. And how this election cycle is going, it might just take weeks or even just a few minutes. But hey, that's my perspective. I'm Skynell Hughes, and thank you for watching.